A little later in the hour, we'll check in with listener reports on vivid travel memories from the Middle East. Right now, we're exploring Budapest with our guides Esther Bokros and Cameron Hewitt, and with our listeners at 877-333-7425. And William's on the line in Miami, Florida. William, thanks for your call.
Hi. Oh, I was planning on going to Budapest maybe in March, but I bought your guidebook a couple of days ago, and I got totally intimidated and decided against it. Because of the, for one thing, the language seems to be incomprehensible. The currency, and I'm used to dishonest cab drivers, having gone to Europe many times. But in your book, you say the restaurateurs always also try to rip you off also.
Well, I'm going to let Cameron defend our book. We wrote it together, and I'll tell you, I cannot speak two words of Hungarian, and don't let that keep you away. But William, were there other concerns? Because this is going to be fun for me to hear Cameron respond. You got crooked cabbies, you got people in the restaurants ripping you off, you got the overwhelming language. Let's hear Cameron. Why should William be bold and go to Budapest?
Well, first of all, you're exactly right that the language is really intimidating and impossible to understand. But the good news is a lot of people there, most people there speak great English, especially people in the tourist trade. I would never pretend to speak Hungarian. I can get by with a few words. But I got to tell you, I've never had a problem going year after year. There's always people there who speak English and are really eager to help you ease your transition.
What's a good backup language?
German is probably the best.
I'm pretty good with German.
Yeah, I speak some German, and that helps a lot. If someone, especially older generation, if they don't speak Hungarian, they probably speak some German.
But find young people and people in tourism, and they'll learn English, I would think.
You'll be surprised. I always say I think more people speak better English in Hungary than in places like Germany and France and Spain and Italy. And it's because it's a little, tiny, powerless country. It's 10 million people. They know that no one's going to learn Hungarian, so they better darn well learn English if they want to get along with the rest of the world. Whereas a bigger country, I think there's less incentive to learn English. So I find the language barrier very, very minimal in Hungary, especially in Budapest.
You know, I've been to Prague, so, you know, I'm used to, you know, you deal with that. But is it really true that the restaurants even tried us to overcharge you and everything?
I would say relative to Prague, the answer is not really. Budapest, I find much more honest in that regard than Prague. There's one street that runs right through the middle of this Pest side. It's the pedestrian shopping street called Váci utca. And this is this very famous sort of main walking street in Pest. Every restaurant on that main drag is a total tourist trap, and they're all trying to pad the bill. If you walk literally a half block off of that street, you're not going to have any problem whatsoever. A 30-second walk from Váci utca, the prices are in half, and the service is much friendlier, and the food is much better.
They all have the menus on the outside.
In general, although you can always step in the door, and I find people very, very welcoming and friendly there. Just stick your head in the door and ask to see a menu if it's not posted.
And the restaurants speak English pretty much?
Same as anywhere else, yep. Almost everyone there, especially working in a restaurant in the city center, would speak English.
Yeah, it's also strange. You said that watch out if a pretty girl comes up and starts to talk to you because she's probably going to do take you to a place, have you buy her expensive champagne, and next thing you know, a big bouncer is going to insist you pay a huge bill.
You know, every city has its own scams. Each city seems to have certain con artists who have specialized in their own thing, and that's Budapest. For some reason, it happens in other places, but it's really an epidemic there. The word in Hungarian, I think, is konzumlány, which means a consumption girl.
So if a beautiful woman has never, ever walked up to you and invited you for a drink, and suddenly you're in Budapest and a beautiful woman does that,
it's probably a ripoff. And what happens is they take, and I've talked to people who this has happened to. It's not happening all the time, but it happens. And they'll take you to some little hole-in-the-wall bar, and they'll say, buy me a glass of champagne, and you'll buy a glass of champagne from a menu with no prices, and then your bill comes, and it's $500.
Wow.
And big, burly bouncers make sure you pay that bill. But it's a really easy way to avoid that. If a really gorgeous woman comes up to you and hits on you, you just figure it's probably a ripoff and say no thanks.
Yeah, I would figure that the way I look.
Okay, William, you got your marching orders. Get over to Budapest and have a good time.
I'll give her a shot, Rick.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Let us know how it goes. Happy travels.
I will. Bye.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about the ins and outs of Budapest. And I'm excited about taking a walk with both of you great guides through what a wonderful city in Budapest. And I mentioned earlier, Cameron, that a lot of people, they think Prague is going to be the best city in Eastern Europe, but they get to Budapest, and really, the connoisseur of Eastern Europe is favorably impressed by Budapest. How do you compare Prague and Budapest?
They're just really different cities. Prague is really superficially beautiful. It's a gorgeous city, beautifully set. The cityscape is just this enchanting, romantic kind of collection of steeples and domes and fine architecture. Budapest is a bigger city. It's a more muscular city. It's more spread out. It also has some very beautiful areas, but it just feels more real. It feels more alive. It feels more vital. Prague has a beautiful surface, But I think even a lot of people who are from Prague would say, especially the old town where the tourists go, there's not a lot of history behind that surface or not a lot of real things going on.
And when people go to the old town in Prague, it is quite touristy, whereas you can get lost in Pest and not feel like you're in a tourist area.
Right. And, you know, Budapest doesn't really have an old town in the same way that Prague does. It doesn't have the cute little cobble. There's a few little areas like that, but it's more of a real city. I compare Budapest more to Paris. That might be a bit of a stretch, but just in terms of the way it's spread out along the river, lots of different landmarks spread all over the place, different distinct neighborhoods.
It's more monumental.
Very monumental, not really one main square or center of town.
Okay, let's take a walk through Budapest now. And Esther, we'll start on Castle Hill. A quick little walk, because we've got a lot to cover. But before we walk across the Chain Bridge, where would we walk and what would we see in Buda?
Okay, if we start on Castle Hill, let's start from Matthias Church. Matthias Church is a gemstone on the Castle Hill area. It's a beautiful Gothic church. We could spend a lot of time to talk about it, but it's something you must see in Budapest, and it's very important concerning Hungarian history. It is something you have to see. It's a masterpiece of Gothic, but let's move forward.
And then you step right out into the Fisherman's Bastion.
And you step right on the Fisherman's Bastion. That was created for the 1896 celebration when Hungary celebrated its 1,000 years of existence. And that is supposed to symbolize the seven tribes arriving to the Carpathian Basin, or the seven tent-looking-like buildings. And it's a neo-Gothic, beautiful structure, and it's a beautiful lookout point.
Where so it's you a can great see lookout over Pest and the Danube River, celebrating 1,000 years since those first tribes people came and established Budapest, huh?
Well, not Budapest, but the first Hungarians who settled in the Carpathian Basin. That was the celebration of that. Then, if you start to walk on the Castle Hill, you have to imagine that you're walking on caves, because Budapest is the capital in the world which has the most caves. And you're walking on medieval rubble when you walk on the Buda side. So you have to imagine that you're walking on medieval rubble. When you walk on medieval rubble, you can see a few medieval houses. This is one area of Budapest where you can see some of those remains, some archways as well, and some of the foundations of medieval buildings. But then you have to imagine when Hungary was occupied by the Turks for 150 years, they set their headquarters on the Buda Castle side, and they brought their camels as well. Everything from Turkey, whatever they made them feel comfortable. When archaeologists were digging for remains, they found not just the medieval remains and bones, but also bones of animals as well, or everyday life items.
So you're standing on all of this rubble. Does this have anything to do with the caves? I've heard that people are enjoying caving in Budapest.
Absolutely.
Tell me about the caves in Budapest.
There are natural cave systems because the Buda side is on a limestone.
And that's something the tourists can do, is explore these caves.
Some of them, yes, are open for tourists.
You can either do like a spelunking trip. That's popular with backpackers these days, where you kind of go explore these caves. Also, right under this Castle Hill we're talking about, there's this fascinating facility they just opened a few years ago. It was used as a hospital during World War II and an air raid shelter during the Cold War, and it was mothballed for decades. And now it's been open to visitors. So you can go and see this modern 20th century hospital burrow deep under the castles and the churches of Castle Hill.
Okay, we're taking a walk across Budapest here, and you get down to the river, and you're going to walk across the Chain Bridge. And this is a heroic bridge. I mean, it's just, to walk on it is like a thunderous experience. But then let's take a little trip over to the Great Market Hall. Esther, tell us about the Great Market Hall.
The Great Market Hall was also part of the constructions in 1986, just to provide facilities for the citizens to buy their groceries in nice, clean places. In the
industrial age there, 1896, this would have been quite a striking one of these big steel and glass structures.
It's a big steel and glass structure with a beautiful majolica roof. And it is still used as a great market hall today, so people still go there to buy their groceries. And in fact, it is said to be that if you want to have quality groceries, you go to this big market hall.
Now, Cameron, upstairs, you can have a taste treat in the Great Market Hall.
Right. The Market Hall, the main floor is all the produce and the paprika and all that sort of thing. And then you go upstairs, there's a little souvenir area in the back. But there's also these wonderful little stand-up snack stands and lunch counters lining the top of the Market Hall. It's a great place to get classic Hungarian dishes like goulash, goulash levish, shepherd soup, or chicken paprikash. And then they also have what's really a favorite called langos. It's kind of like a fry bread, kind of like a savory dumbo ear. And the really traditional way to prepare it is to slather it with sour cream and garlic. Grab that and have a nice snack there right in the market hall.
Esther, what do you put on your langos?
I would definitely put sour cream and cheese.
Sour cream and cheese.
Yes.
Do you feed that to your groups?
Surely.
Do they like it?
Yeah, they like it. They find it a little bit strange. It's a deep-fried bread. It's something what you would call in the States Indian bread.
Okay. No, I find it fun in the markets. They preserve the atmosphere by putting the stinky stuff down in the basement. It's important to go down into the basement, and that's the fish zone, isn't it?
Yes, that's where you can buy fish, but where you can buy also different vegetables. And you have to imagine that in old days when the market hall was built, it was connected with natural channels to the Danube. So the vendors brought their food in
for the shipping
through the ships.
Very nice. Very, very practical.
Very practical.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're walking through Budapest, and our guides are Esther Bokros from Budapest and Cameron Hewitt, who co-authors our guidebook to Budapest. Our phone number is 877-333-7425, and Galen's on the line in San Diego. Galen, thanks for your call.
Yes. My wife and I were in Budapest in August of 2010. Had a great time there. We stayed on the Pest side at the Intercontinental Hotel and had a great room there. And then we walked just about two blocks away from that to the subway station, the Vörösmarty, I think that's how you pronounce it, station, and had a free Budapest walking tour that was really nice. It was a college student that brought us all the way around the Pest first. First we walked to the St. Stephen's Cathedral and other places in the Pest side. Then we walked over the Chain Bridge and went on the Buda side. We saw the Royal Palace and the Fisherman's Bastion, saw where they had fought the war, still got the pocket marks of the bullets and the holes of the buildings over there. Mm. We bought a lot of little neat lacy things to put on the table from some of the vendors that were selling things cheaply.
Now, Galen, you mentioned this is a free tour. Cameron, would that have been one of the Sandemann tours?
I don't think they operate in Budapest, but not only in Budapest, but all over Europe now, this is the trend, these free walking tours. And I got to say, they're kind of hit or miss. There's a number of reasons why they could be a good option, but other reasons why they're not so good. One thing people don't realize is they're advertised as free tours, but the guides who are leading these tours actually have to pay the company for the right to give the tour. And the only way that they get paid is if they get tips. So, for example, if the guide has to pay the company $3 per person that's on the tour, they're expecting a tip of $5 per person at least, and hopefully more than that. So you really are paying for the tour. And then there's a lot of people who wonder if that's really a fair way to pay guides.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a lot of times they use guides who aren't maybe as well trained, maybe aren't licensed. A lot of times those are guides who just are folks who've just arrived. And
students
maybe,
and expats.
Yeah, students who decided to go live in Budapest and are leading these tours. So it's kind of hit or miss.
We had a very good guide. She was a college student and spoke very good English and brought us around to, we spent, I'd say, about 4 or 5 hours walking through Pest and Buda, and did a great job. Yeah, we gave her a tip at the end. We gave her about $10 for the two of us, so mm-hmm. I guess we didn't realize that. But
if everybody does that, she'll be fine. Hey, Galen, apart from the actual guided walk, which you enjoyed, what was your favorite single site in Budapest?
You know, we enjoyed that central market, and I think that's the same thing you're talking about. It's about two bridges south of the mm-hmm. Chain Bridge on the Pest side.
Yeah, it's an exceptional place. You step in there, and it's just a commotion of everything edible about Hungary. I just love
it. That's right. That's right. we live close to Mexico, Tijuana, and the shop in there is very similar to that with the hog's head and dead fish hanging there.
Oh, yeah, you got it.
it's a great place to go into and experience.
All right, Galen, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Happy travels.
Bye.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're walking through the great city of Budapest, the capital of Hungary. Boy, we could talk all day about this, but we didn't get a chance to talk about the massive parliament building. It looks like the halls of parliament in London, right there in the Danube. The great synagogue. It's the second biggest synagogue in the world after one in New York City. The House of Terror and powerful museums that talk about the experience the Hungarians had to live through during communism. And then Hero Square, where we have all of these great pioneers of Hungarian culture celebrated with grand statues. And of course, the baths, where Hungarians stuff into those tight little bathing suits and float around and play chess. It's a beautiful opportunity all across the board to experience Hungarian culture in the capital city. We've been joined by Cameron and Esther. Cameron, what's one sort of moment that you'd remember as a tour guide that's particularly gratifying for people to connect with Hungarian culture?
I had a wonderful experience just very recently, a couple months ago, on a trip to Budapest. I'd had a very long, busy day updating my guidebook. I was tired. I was worn out. And as I planned to, I ended up at Széchenyi Baths, which is one of these great thermal baths and this beautiful turn-of-the-century building. And anyway, as I got into my swimsuit and headed out to the outdoor baths, I was sitting in this 100-degree water, surrounded almost entirely by Hungarians, and all of a sudden, a cold rain began to fall. And I thought, it's the only time I've ever been doing guidebook research, and was glad that it was a cold rain because I was in 100-degree water and it was very comfortable.
Surrounded by Hungarians.
Surrounded by Hungarians in the very local style of Budapest
in
bath.
An elegant turn of the century. Would it have been circa what?
Built around 1896, along 1896. With a lot of these other great buildings in Budapest.
And Esther, what's a great moment for you as a tour guide, showing Americans your beautiful city?
I think always when people's eyes glitter is when we cruise on the Danube at night.
And
that
why?
Is,
what
that
do
is
they
a
see? What is
moment.
What is so magical?
Budapest is beautifully illuminated, the second most illuminated city after Paris. Three bridges are illuminated out of eight, and all the sites alongside the Danube, the castle district, the parliament, churches, universities, all illuminated. So they really, their jaws drop.
Esther Bokros, Cameron Hewitt, thanks so much for sharing your expertise about the capital of Hungary, Budapest. By the way, you can post your own travel tips and tales about Budapest or any place you've been, for that matter, in our online radio forum. It's in the radio section of ricksteves.com. We'll check in next with listeners who've contacted us recently about some pretty incredible travels they've experienced. Let's start out at 877-333-RICK with Peter, checking in from Ontario, California. Peter, thanks for the call.
Thanks for taking it, Rick. How are you?
Doing very well. What are your thoughts about travel?
In the 40-plus years that you've been traveling, what is one of your most vivid memories?
You hit it right on the nail. It's 40-plus now. You make me feel old. But I went on my first trip when I was, my parents dragged me over there when I was 13.
Not trying to make you feel old, of course.
Well, if you've done it for 40 years, you've been around. What are some of my vivid memories?
What is, like, you know, one of your most vivid memories?
Well, any time I have an appreciation for the history or the culture where I'm standing, that's a vivid memory. I remember, and connecting with a person who can make it come to life, I'm really interested in the struggle of people in Eastern Europe to win their freedom from the Soviet Union. And, you know, it's a Cinderella success story because they were hopelessly outgunned. And it was people power. Every country's got these incredible heroic stories to share that are such an inspiration. One example, I've got a friend in Prague in the Czech Republic. And as a young man, he would join tens of thousands of his countrymen every night during their revolution in front of the president's palace, and they'd all be jangling their keys at the president's balcony saying it's time to go home. And they did this for 8 or 10 nights in a row, and then one night they all assembled, 50 or 60,000 of them on the big square, jangling their keychains at the president's palace, and they learned he had gone, and they had won their freedom. And that's exciting to read that in a history book, but to stand there on that main square in Prague and listen to somebody tell the story
firsthand,
who was actually standing right there firsthand, and then to see how far Prague has come in the last 20 years, man, that is a cool experience. Okay, your turn.
So many, but real quickly, standing on the middle of the Academia Bridge on my honeymoon overlooking the Grand Canal, watching the fog settle down like a blanket over Venice.
Oh, Peter in Ontario, California, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Rick.
Happy
Take
travels.
Care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
There's more from our traveling listeners just ahead, including trip reports from Iran. We'll compare notes from my own experience there as we were filming a TV special in just a moment at 877-333-7425. This is Travel with Rick Steves.